We are starting chapter 17 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, called The Four Champions. Harry sat there, aware that every head in the great hall had turned to look at him. He was stunned. He felt numb. He was surely dreaming. He hadn't heard correctly. There was no applause. A buzzing, as though of angry bees, was starting to fill the hall. Some students were standing up to get a better look at Harry as he sat, frozen in his seats. Up at the top table, Professor McGonagall had got to her feet and swept past Ludo Bagman and Professor Karkaroff to whisper urgently to Professor Dumbledore, who bent his ear toward her, frowning slightly. Harry turned to Ron and Hermione. Beyond them, he saw the long Gryffindor table all watching him, open-mouthed. "I didn't put my name in," Harry said blankly. "You know I didn't." Both of them stared, just as blankly black. At the top table, Professor Dumbledore had straightened up, nodding to Professor McGonagall. "Harry Potter," he called again. "Harry, up here, if you please." "Go on," Hermione whispered, giving Harry a slight push. Harry got to his feet, trod on the hem of his robes, and stumbled slightly. He set up the gap between the Gryffindor and Hufflepuff tables. It felt like an immensely long walk. The top table didn't seem to be getting any nearer at all, and he could feel hundreds and hundreds of eyes upon him.
"Where, Harry?"
As though each were a spotlight. The buzzing grew louder and louder. After what seemed like an hour, he was right up in front of Dumbledore, feeling the stares of all the teachers upon him. "Well, through the door, Harry," said Dumbledore. He wasn't smiling. Harry moved off along the teacher's table. Hagrid was seated right at the end. He did not wink at Harry, or wave, or give any of his usual signs of greeting. He looked completely astonished and stared at Harry as he passed like everyone else. Harry went through the door out of the great hall and found himself in a smaller room, lined with paintings of witches and wizards. A handsome fire was roaring in the fireplace opposite him. The faces in the portraits turned to look at him as he entered. He saw a wizened witch flit out of the flame of her picture and into the next one.
In frame.
What?
It said flit out of the flame.
Frame, sorry. Which contained a wizard with a walrus mustache. The wizened witch suddenly started whispering in his ear. Victor Crumb, Cedric Diggory, and Fleur Delacour were grouped around the fire. They looked strangely impressive, silhouetted against the flames. Crumb, hunched up and brooding, was leaning against the mantelpiece, slightly apart from the other two. Cedric was standing in his hand with his hands behind his back, staring into the fire. Fleur Delacour looked around when Harry walked in and threw back her sheet of long silvery hair. "What is it?" she said. Do they want us back in the hall? She thought he had come to deliver a message. Harry didn't know how to explain what just happened. He stood there looking at the three champions. It struck him how tall all three of them were. There was a sound of scurrying feet behind him, and Ludo Bagman entered the room. He took Harry by the arm and led him forward. "Extraordinary," he muttered, squeezing Harry's arm. "Absolutely extraordinary. Gentlemen, lady," he added, approaching the fireside and addressing the other three. "May I introduce, incredible as though it may seem, the fourth Triwizard Champion?" Victor Crumb straightened up. His surly face darkened as he surveyed Harry. Cedric looked nonplussed. He looked from Bagman to Harry and back, as though sure he must have misheard what Bagman had said. Fleur Delacour, however, tossed her hair and smiled and said, "A very funny joke, Mr. Bagman." "Joke?" Bagman repeated, bewildered. No, not at all. Harry's name just came out of the fire. Sorry, the Goblet of Fire." Crumb's thick eyebrows contracted slightly. Cedric was still looking politely bewildered. Fleur frowned. "But evidently there has been a mistake," she said contemptuously to Bagman. "He cannot compete. He is too young." "Well, it is amazing," said Bagman, rubbing his smooth chin and smiling down at Harry. "But, as you know, the age restriction was only imposed this year as an extra safety measure. And his name's come out of the goblet. I mean, I don't think you can be ducking out at this stage. It's down in the rules. You're obliged. Harry will just have to do the best he can. The door opened behind them, and a large group of people came in. Professor Dumbledore, followed closely by Mr. Crouch, Professor Karkaroff, Madame Maxime, Professor McGonagall, and Professor Snape. Harry heard the buzzing of the hundreds of students on the other side of the wall before Professor McGonagall closed the door. "Madame Maxime," said Fleur at once, striding over to her headmistress, "they are saying that this little boy is to compete also." Somewhere under Harry's numb disbelief, he felt a ripple of anger. Little boy? Madame Maxime had drawn herself up to her full and considerable height. The top of her handsome head brushed the candle-filled chandelier, and her gigantic black satin bosom swelled. "What is the meaning of this, Dumbledore?" she said imperiously.
We're getting a little Russian on the French people, babe.
It's hard to do it when I don't have a long... You know, I can't get in the... No.
What is the meaning of this, Dumbledore?
Yeah, there you go. That's better. So now I gotta go back to Karkaroff.
You can make him Russian,
though. Yeah, he was Russian, right?
Yeah, you do a good Russian.
But I forget what Russians sound like.
You just pretend they're French.
"I'd rather like to know the meaning of that myself, Dumbledore."
"Good job,"
said Professor Karkaroff. He was wearing a steely smile, and his blue eyes were like chips of ice. "Two Hogwarts champions? No, champions? I don't remember anybody telling me the whole school has allowed two champions. Or have I not read the rules carefully enough?" He gave a short and nasty laugh. "C'est impossible," said Madame Maxime, whose enormous hand, with its many superb opals, was resting on Fleur's shoulder. "Hogwarts cannot have two champions. It is most unjust." We were under the impression that your age line would keep out younger contestants, Dumbledore," said Karkaroff, his steely smile still in place, though his eyes were colder than ever. "Otherwise, we would, of course, have brought a wider selection of candidates from our schools." I'm getting good at that.
Mm-hmm.
"It's no one's fault but Potter's, Karkaroff," said Snape softly. His black eyes were alight with malice. "Don't go blaming Dumbledore for Potter's determination to break rules. He has been crossing lines ever since he arrived here." "Thank you, Severus," said Dumbledore firmly, and Snape went quiet, though his eyes were still glinted malevolently through his curtain of greasy black hair. Professor Dumbledore was now looking down at Harry, who looked right back at him, trying to discern the expression of the eyes behind the half-moon spectacles. "Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire, Harry?" he asked calmly. "No," said Harry. He was very aware of everybody watching him closely. Snape made a soft noise of impatient disbelief in the shadows. "Did you ask an older student to put it in the Goblet of Fire for you?" said Professor Dumbledore, ignoring Snape. See, why didn't Fred and George do that?
Yeah.
It's very dumb. "No," said Harry vehemently. "Ah, but of course he is lying," said Madame Maxime. Snape was now shaking his head, his lip curling. "Dumbledore must have made a mistake with his line," said Madame Maxime, shrugging. "It is possible, of course," said Dumbledore politely. "Dumbledore, you know perfectly well you did not make a mistake," said Professor McGonagall angrily. "Really, what nonsense. Harry could not have crossed the line himself, as Professor Dumbledore believes that he didn't, and as Professor Dumbledore believes that he did not persuade an older student to do it for him. I'm sure that should be good enough for everybody else." She shot a very angry look at Professor Snape. "Mr. Crouch, Mr. Bagman," said Karkaroff, his voice unctuous once more. "You are our objective judges. Surely you'll agree that this is most irregular." Bagman wiped his round, boyish face with his handkerchief and looked at Mr. Crouch, who was standing outside the circle of the firelight, his face half hidden in shadow. He looked slightly eerie, the half-darkness making him look much older, giving him an almost skull-like appearance. When he spoke, however, it was his usual curt voice. We must follow the rules, and the rules state clearly that those people whose names come out of the Goblet of Fire are bound to compete in the tournament. Well, Barty knows the rulebook back to front, said Bagman, beaming and turning to Karkaroff and Madame Maxine, as though the matter was now closed. I insist upon submitting the names of the rest of my students, said Karkaroff. He had dropped his unctuous tone and his smile now. His face wore a very ugly look indeed. You will set up the Goblet of Fire once more, and we will continue adding names until each school has two champions. It's only fair, Dumbledore. But Karkaroff, it doesn't work like that, said Bagman. The Goblet of Fire has just gone out. It won't reignite until the start of the next tournament. In which Dumbledore will be most certainly not competing. Durmstrang will be most certainly not competing, exploded Karkaroff. After all our meetings and negotiations and compromises, I little expected something of this nature to occur. I've half a mind to leave now. Empty threat, Karkaroff, growled a voice from near the door. You can't leave your champion now. He's got to compete. They've all got to compete. Binding magical contract, like Dumbledore said. Convenient, eh? Moody had just entered the room. He limped toward the fire, and with every step he took, there was a loud clunk. Convenient, said Karkaroff. I'm afraid I don't understand you, Moody. Harry could tell he was trying to sound disdainful, as though what Moody was saying was barely worth his notice. But his hands gave them away. They had balled themselves into fists. Don't you? Said Moody quietly. It's very simple, Karkaroff. Somebody put Potter's name in that goblet knowing he'd have to compete if it came out. Evidently, someone who wished to give Hogwarts two bites at the apple, said Madame Maxine. I quite agree, Madame Maxine, said Karkaroff, bowing to her. I shall be lodging complaints with the Ministry of Magic and the International Confederation of Wizards. But if anyone's got reason to complain, it's Potter, growled Moody. But funny thing, I don't hear him saying a word. Why should he complain? Burst out Fleur Delacour, stamping her foot. He has the chance to compete, hasn't he? We have been hoping to be chosen for weeks and weeks. The honor for our schools, 1,000 galleons in prize money. This is a chance many would die for. Maybe someone's hoping Potter is going to die for it, said Moody, with the merest trace of a growl. An extremely tense silence followed these words. Ludo Bagman, who was looking very anxious indeed, bounced nervously up and down on his feet and said, Moody, old man, what a thing to say. We all know Professor Moody considers the morning wasted if he hasn't discovered 6 plots to murder him before lunchtime, said Karkaroff loudly. Apparently, he is now teaching his students to fear an assassination, too, an odd quality in a defense against the dark arts teacher. Dumbledore, but no doubt you had your reasons. Imagining things, am I? Growled Moody. Seeing things, eh? It was a skilled witch or wizard who put the boy's name in that goblet. What evidence is there of that? Said Madame Maxine, throwing up her huge hands. Because they hoodwinked a very powerful magical object, said Moody. You would have needed an exceptionally strong confundus charm to bamboozle that goblet into forgetting that only 3 schools compete in the tournament. I'm guessing they submitted Potter's name under a 4th school to make sure he was the only one in the category. You seem to have given this a great deal of thought, Moody, said Karkaroff coldly, and a very ingenious theory it is, though of course I heard you recently got into your head that one of your birthday presents contained a cunningly disguised basilisk egg and smashed it to pieces before realizing that it was a carriage clock. So you'll understand if we don't take you entirely seriously as well. There are those who will turn innocent occasions to their advantage, Moody retorted in a menacing voice. It's my job to think the way dark wizards do, Karkaroff, as you ought to remember. Alistair, said Dumbledore warningly. Harry wondered for a moment who he would be speaking to, but then he realized Mad-Eye could hardly be Moody's real first name. Moody fell silent, though still surveying Karkaroff with satisfaction. Karkaroff's face was burning. How the situation arose, we do not know, said Dumbledore, speaking to everyone gathered in the room. It seems to me, however, that we have no choice but to accept it. Both Cedric and Harry have been chosen to compete in the tournament. This, therefore, they will do. Ah, but Dumbledore! My dear Madame Maxine, if you have an alternative, I would be delighted to hear it. Dumbledore waited, but Madame Maxine did not speak. She merely glared. She wasn't the only one, either. Snape looked furious, Karkaroff livid. Bagman, however, looking rather excited. By the way, this is one of those things that Dumbledore sort of tried, and it sort of worked with him. The idea that if someone's mad at you, ask them what they would do instead.
Yeah.
And I tried using this once with my students when I there was an issue with one of their exams that I was a little harsher than they kept told me to be, but I had thought very hard and very long for a way to be not as harsh, and I decided I couldn't. And so, without being defensive, I just asked them, put yourself in my position, what would you say is fair?
Right.
Just tell me honestly. And no one came forward and was like, they deserve more points.
See, I would have totally
really?
Taken you
home. No, but you don't know the situation.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, but if I had thought that I really
right.
should, like, deserve
that's
it.
The thing. And if someone had come forward, I would have been more than happy to listen, you
right.
know, but...
Yep, it's a very good thing to use with people when you're, you know, trying to deal diplomatically with people who are being unreasonable.
Yeah. Anyways,
yeah.
So Bagman goes, well, shall we crack on then? He said, rubbing his hands together and smiling around the room. Got to give our champions their instructions, haven't we? Barty, you want to do the honors? Mr. Crouch seemed to come out of a deep reverie. Yes, he said, the instructions, yes. The first task. He moved forward into the firelight. Close up, Harry thought he looked ill. There were dark shadows beneath his eyes, and a thin, papery look about his wrinkled skin that had not been there at the Quidditch World Cup.
What's wrong with him again?
I don't know.
Isn't he under the Imperius curse?
Yeah, I think he might be. Or maybe he was?
No, he is, because remember when he takes control of the ministry, he is, like, turns really bad. Because he's under
the...
Like, someone's controlling him.
I think you may be right. I can't remember, but yeah, I think it sounds about right. The first task is designed to test your daring, he told Harry, Cedric, Fleur, and Victor. So we're not going to be telling you what it is. Courage in the face of the unknown is an important quality in a wizard, very important. The first task will take place on November the 24th, in front of the other students in the panel of judges. The champions are not permitted to ask for or accept help of any kind from their teachers to complete the tasks in the tournament. The champions will face the first challenge armed only with their wands. They will receive information about the second task when the first is over. Owing to the demanding and time-consuming nature of the tournament, the champions are exempted from the end-of-year tests.
Oh, wow.
Mr. Crouch turned to look at Dumbledore. I think that's all, is it, Albus? I think so, said Dumbledore, who was looking at Mr. Crouch with mild concern. Are you sure you wouldn't like to stay at Hogwarts, Barty? No, Dumbledore, I must get back to the ministry, said Mr. Crouch. It is a very busy, very difficult time at the moment. I've left young Weatherby in charge. Very enthusiastic, a little over-enthusiastic, truth be told. You'll come by and have a drink before you go, at least, said Dumbledore. Come on, Barty, I'm staying, said Bagman brightly. It's all happening at Hogwarts now, you know. Much more exciting here than at the office. I think not, Ludo, said Crouch with a touch of his old impatience. Professor Karkaroff, Madame Maxine, a nightcap, said Dumbledore. But Madame Maxine had already put her arm around Fleur's shoulders and was leading her swiftly out of the room. Harry could hear them both talking very fast in French as they went off into the great hall. Karkaroff beckoned to Crumb, and they too exited, though in silence. Harry, Cedric, I suggest you go to bed, said Dumbledore, smiling at both of them. I'm sure Gryffindor and Hufflepuff are waiting to celebrate with you. And it would be a shame to deprive them of this excellent excuse to make a great deal of mess and noise. Harry glanced at Cedric, who nodded, and they left together. The great hall was deserted now. The candles had burned low, giving the jagged smiles of the pumpkins an eerie, flickering quality. So, said Cedric, with a slight smile, we'll be playing against each other again. I suppose, said Harry. He couldn't really think of anything to say. The inside of his head seemed to be in complete disarray, as though his brain had been ransacked.
So tell me, said Cedric as they reached the entrance hall, which was now lit only by torches in the absence of the Goblet of Fire, how did you get your name in? I didn't, said Harry, staring up at him. I didn't put it in. I was telling the truth. Okay, said Cedric. Harry could tell Cedric didn't believe him. Well, see you then. And maybe we'll stop there. Okay, I love you very much, kitten. Sleep well. You're very, very cute. And you're getting ready to go to class right now. You look super cute. I love you so much. Good night.